Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Chinese Miracle. The book is Wild Ride, a short history of the opening and closing of the Chinese economy. First, the opening part. There's been an international banking crisis, and the way that the Beijing Chinese Communist Party responds to it, as Anne says in their tasseled loafers, is to hoist cash on the population. And that creates opportunities. The opportunities, however, look like the creation of a golem monster. This is Anne's vision, Anne's metaphor. It works. But what we have is a change of opinion of the Chinese people. No longer, as Anne writes, or do you want a home and a car and access to cigarettes, which at one point were understood to be keeping your lungs healthy. But you want to be rich. You want to grab the brass ring. Was this going on all across the country or just the coastal cities, the big cities, Anne?
I think everybody had this idea that they could grab some of this cash that was raining down on China. Everybody heard about the companies that were listing on international markets, and all of the private investment. And so people wanted to, you know, people in the countryside moved to the cities. They weren't allowed to bring their families, but, you know, men and women would move to the big cities and try to get a bit of this.
Yes, and they got a lot of it. We have the creation of what I came to first understand was something strange called ghost cities. Now, Anne gives us details about what was going on with this enormous amounts of cash. There were three Hong Kongs built, two Manhattans. There was a little Paris, and there was a red square complete with an Orthodox church that nobody would ever worship in. It was only for background pictures. Probably my favorite is a Manhattan that includes a Javits Center. Have the people who built the Javits Center, have they ever been there? It's really a windy barn. It's not something to emulate.
I know. Well, I think that they must have a license from the actual Javits Center. I never asked the question, or at least the Chinese said that. I never asked it of the Javits Center in Manhattan, but who would think of that otherwise?
Yes, I understand. There's one city that was complete with what they imported. They imported polo ponies because they wanted to present Buenos Aires, I guess, at its most dream driven, you know, to have Argentine polo ponies about them. Does all this is in the first decade of the 21st century. Does all this still stand in the rain, and all of these magical cities?
You know, a lot of them are crumbling. The one there's this one called Kangbashir in sort of Lawrence of Arabia desert in the middle of Ordos, Mongolia, that had a lot of money because of a coal mining boom and the centralization of coal mining in the province. And that one, because they could never get people to move to that city, had to actually dynamite the buildings and rebuild them.
We come to 2008. The cash is pouring down. What's about to happen is what we remember as the Great Recession, which was a banking crisis. When you give credit, you're creating cash. And if that loan cannot be serviced, it's done. The bank's in trouble. It's not adequately capitalized. Well, that happened to China times 10. And Anne says this is the Bernie Madoff moment. But before we got there, it was the 2008 Olympics that was an illustration of that China had built a Potemkin culture, really. Everything was for show. There wasn't an investment in healthcare and education and retirement, just buildings you could see. And no place was more illustrative of that than what happened to Beijing. You give me the detailed that they had every building that was facing a road where foreigners might travel to come to the Olympics was painted one of five colors. Do you remember what the colors were? Were they pastels or were they primary colors?
They were different shades of gray and tan, basically.
I see. So we have a culture that is transforming what? They closed the steel mills. They closed the coal-fired electricity plants. All the taxi drivers had to wear uniforms. What were they worried about? What did they think that their secret would be exposed, that they've overextended?
You know, it's just this Chinese idea that the whole country is your home, that you have to present the best face on. Even the word for China in Chinese is my country. And they feel that foreigners visiting are visitors to their home and should be impressed. But it was pretty darn annoying to live there in the run up to the Olympics. They kept on, for example, Beijing would steal rain from the neighboring provinces by shooting some chemical into the clouds to make it rain so that the sky would be clear. And, you know, for Hubei right next door, which is a farming province, they were hopping mad because they didn't get rain.
The Great Recession. Now, the crisis of 98 is dwarfed by the scale of this Great Recession. And the decision is made again. I don't know if they're still wearing tasseled loafers. They're up to date here in Beijing. Is to pour even more money, having not been able to balance the loans that we made in the last 10 years, we're going to pour more money. And the number I recall reporting, Jan, was $4 trillion or 4 trillion yen. Do we know how much they poured on the economy?
Well, that was at the end of 2008, because the Chinese leaders were very, very frightened that the international crisis would have a contagion in China. So they wanted to put up a big number that would impress people and make them feel calm. So they put up this 4 trillion renminbi. In the end, they didn't spend that as subsidies or as, you know, financial allocations. They spent far more in loans from the banks.
They build even bigger cities. This is where I was breathless. They built cities so vast that it includes, and this one, I can't tell what my favorite is, the 150-kilometer canal, so that water could fill the moat of a magical castle they'd built thinking the tourists were going to come. Does that moat still exist? Does that canal still exist?
I don't think they ever completed it. That was in Yunnan. But they did. I did view a lake that they dug in the desert in Inner Mongolia in order to have a yacht club. And they actually had a yacht manufacturing company. I don't think they ever started that, though. And they had this supposed private school for boys where they'd have all these posters outside of boys wearing blazers and things like that. I don't think the school ever opened.
There's one city, Tianjin, that builds three port facilities for cruise ships, never having had a cruise ship call at the port. So and this is generating GDP, although you mentioned the GDP is not to be trusted, but it looks like it's growing at 9% a year. And now the puzzle, these details that you provide for us, were they available for foreign investors at the time? Wall Street was in a bullish mood about the Chinese economy. Did it know about these magical cities that have no people?
You know, for Wall Street, the fact that investment is pointless and is going to assets that will be dead assets very soon is not a particularly relevant piece of information, because the point is the GDP was growing and they wanted a piece of that. And for the most part, you know, they were right.
Hu Jintao is the leader of China during this period up till 2012. And I recall reading about one of Hu Jintao's children being involved in a scheme in Zambia. That was the first time I had reporting information, that something was awry in the Chinese model. Was that well known, that the children of the princes were dominating the billionaire creation and or their friends, and that this was one great big elite family that was keeping everything for itself? Was that well known on Wall Street?
You know, I think so. But in China, the worst crime you can commit is lèse majesté, which is, you know, the mention of the leadership's families and their children and themselves having equity and stuff and making money. It will send you directly to jail or it will get your business closed down. The reality is that Chinese leaders have built up trillions in U.S. dollar assets in havens like the Caymans and BVI.
This statistic, I'm thinking I wrote my note correctly. The loans that they lavished on the banks lavished on individuals in 5 years were the equivalent of the entire U.S. banking system after 200 years. Did I get that fact right? It was some incredible.
That's about correct. The consumption, here's another one, the consumption of cement in 3 years in China, I believe it was 2009 through 2012, was greater than the consumption of cement in 150 years in the United States. And sure, you can say there are more people in China, but the landmass is roughly the same. So they really shouldn't need that much cement.
Now, the creation of billionaires, they're farming billionaires right now. They're in all directions. However, the billionaires have access to political power. How was that handled by the Chinese Communist Party? Was it okay to create Jack Ma's everywhere?
Well, I think that's a critical reason why you see people like Jack Ma detained, because, you know, in other societies, money flows to political power and political power creates money. In China, it's not supposed to be bidirectional, just unidirectional. And so when you see people like Jack Ma or the head of Dalian Wanda or the head of China Renaissance becoming very, very wealthy, that's a great concern. And so you have to step on them, take over their assets, maybe detain the people, maybe charge them with corruption.
And Belt and Road, first there was 2025, in which they were going to have 10 critical industries entirely in China. And then they were followed that with the Belt and Road Initiative. Was that a way to spend the cash? They couldn't build any more Manhattans in China, so they had to go build one in Kenya. Is that why?
Well, the Belt and Road initially was just an extension of the going out program that Jiang Zemin had begun in 2002, I believe. And the idea was, well, we have all of this money, so we need to find good ways to invest it overseas. The problem is that they didn't find good ways to invest it overseas.
And the Ponzi of this, the making of loans, we've talked about this, where the municipalities were obliged to borrow against land and then use that borrowed money to build hotels and residences that no one could live in but because they weren't finished. But you would sell the apartments to be built in that residence in 2 years. Was that going on in this period between after the Great Recession? Did they start that under Hu Jintao and then continued under Xi Jinping, or was that a more recent development?
Well, it basically got hyped up on steroids after the 2009 explosion of capital into the economy. It had begun in 1998 because localities really had no way to fund themselves until the State Development Bank came up with this idea. Well, you know, you own land, so why don't you just collateralize the land and we'll give you loans based on that collateral. At the same time, housing was privatized and the state-owned enterprises got money from no longer having to provide housing to their employees. So everybody has money. Everybody's happy. There's a new market. And things start to grow, but it really exploded after 2009.
The book is Wild Ride, A Short History of the Opening and Closing of the Chinese Economy. And Stevenson Yang is the author. We come to the crisis, the one we're still inside of, which is COVID-19 2020. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.